If you knew how clumsy I was, these wouldn't have been put there, I don't think, first. If you wouldn't mind. Thank you. This is not on, is it? Is it on? Yeah? Okay. Val and I just really want to thank you for this wonderful, wonderful camp for us. Obviously, we've heard what it's been for you, but for us, it's been a fantastic renewal for us and new ground for us, which I think, you know, I know right at the beginning of camp, you were asked how long you've been coming to camp and so on. I suppose a follow-up question that I would have is, has your light got any brighter?
Yes.
Otherwise, it's just years. Yeah, so, but Val and I mean, thank you so much for your financial generosity, but more than that, the treasure we take away with us is not just friends, but some soul companions. Tonight, I want to talk to you about light. And you're all familiar, I think, with these words, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works. But as usual with the Bible, God gives me plenty of license to just adapt it slightly. Because I don't think Jesus was saying, you know, just show everybody your good works. That's not what he was saying. What he was saying, it's coming back to my original point in my first talk, that you cannot borrow light. It's not the light of Jesus that shines in you. It's the light of Christ. There is a big difference. There is only one source of light, and that's God, the Father of lights. So I believe that what Jesus is saying is, look, when your light, he didn't say, let my light. He said, let your light. Let your light shine. You can't borrow mine. Let your light shine. Because I will be off the planet soon. So I want you to let your light shine. So that people may know that good exists. That's what I think Jesus was saying. So they'll know that light exists. Because goodness and light are twins. Where there's light, there's goodness. And I would really encourage you to use that as the yardstick. That if people can claim to be of God, then look for goodness. Look for light. Look for evidence. There are some marvelously seductive people on the planet who have convinced many people through the centuries that they're from God. But there was no light. But people were so needing to be loved, they followed anyway. So there are dangerous people out there that purport to be of God. But look for light, look for love, and look for goodness. In other words, look for the fruits of the Spirit. Really? Work backwards. Work backwards. Look for the fruits of the Spirit first before you make any commitment and decisions. And regardless of what Don has said about the sun, I really don't think we need to panic. Because on the first day, God said, let there be light. It's only on the third day that he said, and let there be lights in the sky, sun and moon. So there was light before there was the sun. And I want you to think about that as well. The sun is on the outside. The light that came before on the first day was light for the inside. Light for the inside. And there'll come a time, Don, when your magazines would not be necessary. Because I believe there will come a time when there'll be enough light shining on the inside of human beings on the planet. We will not need the sun. And I also want to just read this to you. It doesn't say in Genesis that God created darkness. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And the earth was formless and void, and darkness was over the surface of the deep. Doesn't say God created it. Doesn't say God said, let there be darkness. Only light can come from God, not darkness. And earlier in the week, Burns talked about a quote from Psalm 139, which is one of my favourite passages, parts of the Bible. Because it's got it all in there. It's got the psychotherapeutic stuff. God knew you before you were formed in your womb. It's got all that you need to eliminate fear in that psalm as well. Even the dark will not be dark to God. Yeah. Even the dark will not be dark to God. So when we talk about demons and so on, and we start to create fears and experience fears, the omnipresence of God. There is no corner of our planet, no corner of the universe where God is not. Coming back to Emerson, either God is there or he is not there. But if he's there for you, in every moment, when we were sitting in the hospital waiting room, waiting for this nurse, bless her, who was the one who was going to break the news to Val and I as to the cancer. Was it something that wasn't too serious? What stage was it? And so on. And this poor woman left with the responsibility to share that to us too. And I was really wanting her to be okay, regardless of what she was about to say. I really wanted her to be okay. I'm thinking, it's not fair that you should carry this burden. It's not. And when she shared that with us, I already, because of the way I was thinking about her, God was in that room because I was loving her. And that took my fear away because the presence of God was in that room because I brought God into that room by thinking about her, about love, bringing love into situations. I've got permission from Don to finish at 9:05 because he's given me the full hour regardless of what time he started. So, okay, I need to use that. Every single day of our lives, we add to light or we add to darkness. We add to light or we add to darkness. Doesn't matter what your belief system is. If you allow fear to come into your mind and dwell with that fear, it adds to the ocean of fear that's already there on the planet. You add to it. When you dismiss the fear, you increase the light. I was rubbish at school with mathematics. And as soon as the equation went like, if it takes two men to dig a hole, how many men will it take to dig whatever? I would say, please, miss, why are two men digging a hole? And then it would be, please, miss, why are six men digging holes? What are all these holes all about? So that's always been my mind, to inquire to the why of things. To the why of things. So this ocean of fear that our fear thoughts add to, don't they? I know most of you would have heard of Carl Jung's idea of the collective unconscious. Yeah? Well, we add to that collective unconscious of fear. Or we add to that collective unconscious of light, depending on how we think. And I say this not so that you will condemn yourself, but that you will realize the importance of eradicating fear. Because out of fear, we get abuse, we get wars, we get all the negative things on the planet out of fear. They don't come from light. They come from fear. They come from the dark. And if one evil deed is done on the planet, one dark deed is done on the planet, when we're thinking fear, we're collectively responsible for that deed. We're either all one or we're not. When we talk about the oneness, we can't pick and choose who belongs to the one and who doesn't. God is the Father of all, Paul tells us. The Father of all mankind. We're all one family. And what one does in that family, we're all collectively responsible. And we all need to shine our light more. And I do think, I was just talking to Burns the other day about it, that I have the sense that the 12 tribes of Israel and that pattern of tribes was much more effective than the nuclear family today. Because as a therapist, I can't see where the nuclear family has a great record of success. In Great Britain, 2/3 of marriages fail. And that's in the statistics. The third one, as I know quite often, people stay together because they're not brave enough to separate. It takes courage to separate. It takes courage to end something. So looking at that evidence, does that really show you that nuclear family works? And too much goes on in the dark in nuclear families. But tribes, where there might be more protection, more support for one another. When you come to CFO, you feel safe, don't you? You feel safe. It's one of the attributes of CFO, one of the qualities of it. You feel you're part of a family. And why for some of you it's so difficult when you go back after CFO to living alone. But omnipresence of God, God will be with you. God is always with you, but it's hard. So I want you to think about how you and I can continue to rid ourselves of fear. The light is always shining, and our journey is to remove this and that which blocks the light. So whatever the this and the that is of your life, that blocks the light. Because the light is always shining. And I want to just ask you to think about your mind, your heart, your soul. See, although I was rubbish at maths at school, I think the equations I come up with for myself work much more effective for me than mathematics. And I think that to hunger and thirst after righteousness or right oneness, after harmony, after unity, is the rhythm and the connection between mind, heart, and soul. And it's no good you focusing on your soul journey if you need healing in your emotional world and you need healing in your mental world. You cannot split off yourself like that. It's only the mind and the heart that need healing, because the soul is always shining. Because God is always shining. God is in the soul. That's where God lies and is resident. When we talk about God being resident, living in us, he lives in the soul. But emotionally and mentally, we've got work to do, all of us. So the light can shine more and more up. And the houses that you have with basements, we don't have those in England. The rich people might. Downton Abbey people might. I don't know. But if you imagine that your basement, which you, some of you, you know, I know use for recreation or to store things and so on. But in my mind, I see the basement as the soul, where the light is always shining. But then as you go up the floors to the next level, which is the heart, and then the next level, the mind, where all the blockages are, and all that light is beaming away in the basement, all that power you might have generated, some of you in your basement, all that power can't come up through into the heart and into the mind, because it's being blocked in those places. And the heart, as you know, it needs to have, the human heart, the physical heart, needs to have all the passages clear for the blood to flow around. The arteries being hardened means that the heart could be in problems one day. If we don't live with that love flowing through the arteries all the time and the energy flowing, then the heart gets blocked and the light can't shine through. And with the mind, the thoughts we think, and I've often wondered, there's the kind of question, again, the equation of thoughts and feelings. As therapists, you know, we often have a discussion, what comes first, the thought or the feeling? And my sense is it may be the feeling, because when we're babies, we can only feel, can't think. So developmentally, feelings come first. But then there's a mystery about the mind. The mind is much deeper than we know. So in the conscious mind, we might think, for instance, a feeling comes first. But somewhere behind the conscious mind, there may have been a thought that triggered that feeling. Some whisper somewhere that we heard that didn't quite register in the front of our minds. So there's not an answer to that question. But it's worth thinking about. Now, some of us, quite a lot of us, process the world and circumstances through our feeling world first. We feel. And it's often related to gender, but you can forget that. I'm not interested in gender. I'm interested in the feminine and the masculine. And those of us that move in the feminine, the highly sensitive person, will actually come from the feminine, deeply in the feminine. And be much more tuned in to everything, to fear, to love, to beauty. Van Gogh, that wonderful song. Wonderful song. About this world being too difficult for Van Gogh to live in because of his sensitivity. We live in an angry world. We live in a frightening world. So if you're highly sensitive, it's even more frightening. Even more frightening. So we process through our feeling world, or we process through our minds. I'm one of those people that processes through his mind first. I'll think upon things. I'll think around things before I need to let feelings come in. And do I need to let feelings come in or not? Mm-hmm. Is it a feeling issue? And I had a thought, Burns, about your very profound question. That theological question about whether all are saved and so on. And I do believe that some questions are not answered by the mind. They're answered by the heart. I think that question is answered by the heart. And it's not just because my mother's maiden name was Shepherd. But I thought today, I had a thought today that when I was swimming, that if we're all in heaven, and I was there, let me just step back a little bit. And I hope you stay with me when I flit about from the simple to the deep. And the surface, as Emerson talks about, some of us skate on the surface of life. What a wonderful description. We skate on the surface and we never go beneath the ice. We never go deeper. We give the illusion that we're going deeper, but we just skate on the surface of life. Anyway, one day I was at work in the 80s, 1980s. And I had a phone call to say that my brother, who suffered with emphysema, he was on 24-hour, he was 37, he was on 24-hour oxygen by that point. But the oxygen was no longer working, really. That you get to a point where the lungs are just not, they're just gone. And I had a phone call from my sister-in-law, I only lived 10 minutes away, had a phone call from my sister-in-law to say, can you come quickly? It's Jim. It's Jim. So I drove round and he was sitting on the stairs when I got there. And his face was blue, purple, no air getting to him at all. Ambulance had been called. And I went up to him with him in the ambulance and I sat with him with my arm around him on the stairs, and he's my older brother, and sometimes I went to him. I usually went to him for money. In a good way, because he knew that we had two children and we struggled, and he knew that. And sometimes I say to Jim, Jim, we need £40. And he'd say, Alan, there's £40. But going up in the ambulance, I knew this was the day of his death. And just like Burns really saying about his mother, we stood round his bed as he was dying, and he was dying peacefully. And just before the priest, it was a priest rather than a minister or a vicar, it was a priest who was at the hospital, the chaplain. And I looked up suddenly with my eyes closed, and the priest just said that Jim had died in that moment. And the medical staff said, yes, the breath has gone. And within a minute, I saw him running on the beach. Running on a beach. And he turned around to wave to me. Anna, look at me. I'm running now. I'm running now. He used to do hurdles when he was younger. He was a wonderful runner. Alan, I'm running now. I can breathe now. I'm running now. But there was one day when, a few months earlier, I got a phone call to say I got a call from a sister-in-law to say, I can't go to the hospital. Can you go? That's right. So I went to my manager and I said to him, I had a phone call. My brother needs me. And thankfully for him, in some ways, he said, that's fine, Alan, you can go. Because there was another incident involving my daughter a few years later. I had a phone call to say something had happened with our daughter. She was 13. And I went to a manager and I said, I need to go. I've had a phone call. My daughter needs me. He said, well, I'm not sure I can let you go. I said, I'm going. You'll need to sort out what you're going to do with that later. But when I got to the hospital with my brother, the hospital staff came to me and said, Alan, we're so glad you've come. We don't know what to do with him. He's distraught. We think he knows he's dying. A few weeks before he died. And I put my arm around him. He said, Alan, it feels like in the last 2 years we've just found each other. Because we didn't grow up together. I can't explain that. We didn't grow up together. We came together as adults. And I put my arm around him. He said, we just got to know each other a little bit. He said, and now I'm dying, I'm going. And I said to him, Jim, nothing can separate us from love. Love will always keep us together. Love is inseparable. Love never fails. And I'll be talking about the unfailing love of God shortly. I tell you these stories so that you know that Alan just wasn't born positive. Yeah? That I've had my own journey. My own journey through fear to get to a place where, as Helen Keller, bless her, says, I'm not afraid of storms because I've learned how to sail my boat, how to sail my ship. And you do need, CFO, if only you would practice, and I know some of you do, but this is not just about this week in the year. If you don't train in the spirit, when circumstances come that are difficult for you, if you've not done the work, just like Byrne said about the marathon, if you've not done the work, you're not going to run very far before you fall over and before circumstances overwhelm you, rather than, as Emerson says, you thinking me a child of my circumstances. When circumstances come that are difficult, we need to be adults. We need to stand. And we need to overcome. And the Bible talks about us being overcomers, and we sing lots of songs about that. About we're an army, and we put on the spiritual armor. We put on the whole armor of God. No, we don't. No, we don't. We don't put on the whole armor of God. We've never done that. We've shouted for help, and God has come. Although he's always been there in us. But let's not pretend. Let's know when we're aspiring to something and know where we're in something and it's real. And spirituality is real for us. Wonderful songs we sing. But let's note the aspirational as against the real. If we're five in the kingdom of God, spiritually, then celebrate being five. Don't pretend to be 45 and a spiritual giant. If you're five developmentally in the spirit, then be five. Your journey's begun. But don't pretend. God is after authenticity. Val's got a wonderful book that Denby gave her years and years ago. And the subtitle is The Excavation of the Authentic Self. Some of you might have read it. But God is interested in the you that he created in the womb. He's not interested in the fraudulent you that you've become, and we've all become. He knows who we are in the seed of our spirit, and that's who he wants to see emerge. He knows when we're pretending. So let's give up the ghost on that, and let's be real. Let's not be afraid to be much younger than we think we are in the spirit. Really. Let's start from that place. That's authenticity. It's when Jesus said a child should lead them. And I've heard fears already coming into the camp about, you know, numbers and what will happen to CFO in Winnie. What will happen to Winnie? What will happen if Ian and Denby aren't here? Oh, no. Emerson, all revolutions start in the mind of one man. CFO started in the mind of one man, one light. If it was started by one light, it only needs one light to keep it going. So our thinking and feeling world. What needs healing? And I've had the pleasure of, you know, and it has been a pleasure. No fear attached with Anne driving us down in the golf cart. But as with CFO, and as when we're, you know, in tune, when we tune into the ether, when we really tune in, the memories can come. You see, if we repress emotional damage and trauma that's been in our lives, but we try not to think about it, I think that was then, but we haven't healed. And so, travelling on the back of the car, it triggered a memory for me. In the village in Oxfordshire, when I was about 9, there was this young boy called Gilbert, and he was 5, coming into school, and he looked a bit frightened and a bit worried, and he was like that in the playground. He wasn't as rambunctious, say, as Charlton, our grandson, who just would step into any group of strangers and be Charlton without any intimidation. But Gilbert wasn't like that. He was a shy little boy. And I was 9. I was, you know, confident, outgoing. Denby won't believe this, but I sang a solo soprano Over the Sea to Sky to the class when I was 9. You can't live in the past, Ian. And so I befriended Gilbert. I noticed him in the playground, and I just played with him. Day after day, I just played with him. And when it came to the school sports day, and you got sixpence if you won a race, and I won 5. So I had plenty of sixpences. And I remember giving Gilbert a sixpence, and he was thrilled to bits. And then one day, Gilbert's family asked me for Sunday tea. Now, if I could just say that although we were accepted and incorporated into the village life, only up to a point, none of us had seen the inside of the houses in the village, the cottage. We didn't know what ordinary homes looked like. Been there since I was 3 to 7 to 10. Never knew the inside of someone's home. And this is why it's been so special for me this week to feel in the centre of home. In times when that's not been the case. And so I was invited, and I was so excited that I was going to be the first. But also the wonder, fourth dimensional for me. Fourth dimensional. Never been there before. Someone's home. And then reality kicked in. Nobody's ever done this before. Nobody from the home. And in the end, I started to think, I can't ask. I can't ask Auntie Audrey or Auntie Olive if it's okay for me to do that, to go Sunday tea. Nobody's done that before. So that potential joy for me, and it would have been a very joyous moment for me, I thought, this is not going to happen. What am I going to do? So what I did, because I was conflicted. You know, when you have a deep, deep longing to do something, but somehow you feel that's never going to happen. And so those feelings, you don't know what to do with that mixture of joy and I guess sadness and misery, really. Joy and misery coming together and thinking, well, actually, soaring and then falling, really. Soaring and then falling. In a moment. And I decided, and this is what we do when we have conflicted emotions and we don't want to feel. We don't want to cope with those. A 9-year-old boy couldn't cope with all the feelings that were going on in him. And I thought, well, I know what I can do. If I jump on the back of this milk cart that went up and down the lane, and then I throw myself off it onto the road, if I could cut my knee badly enough, then I could say to the family, to Doreen, who was the older sister, and Janice, who was the other sister, why I didn't go, because look at my knee. And so I did that. 3 times I jumped off, and there wasn't enough blood. So do it again, and so on. And Sunday, nobody knew other than me and the family. And Sunday, their car pulled up outside the gates at 4 o'clock. And they waited a while, and then they drove off. And I looked out the window and saw it drive off. And it's like, now I can interpret that and say, there was the potential transport to take me to joy. But I couldn't get on the transport. So now I still struggle to get in the middle of things. Because is it for me? Is it for Alan? There was a line I couldn't cross back then. Really? So can I cross those lines now? Can I really believe that good is for me? That surely goodness and mercy will hunt me down all my life? Yes, it will. But will I turn around one day and say, come on then, let me have all you've got? And I still struggle with that. I still struggle to receive on that intimate level love. Because is it really for the boy who grew up in the home? Is it really for me? Is it for everyone else but not for me? So I still struggle with that. I know some of you do as well. That think, you know, it's all right for other people. They seem to know what joy is and how to express it. But I don't know how to receive it. Kris Kristofferson, in my 30s, was a hero of mine in terms of, not in his lifestyle, but in his lyrics, in his masculinity. Because we need to know when to be in our feminine and when we need to be in our masculine and try and get that balance right. And that is equated to our thinking and feeling. There are some times the masculine is the thinking, the feeling is the feminine. If you're all in your feelings, you've got no boundaries. You need the masculine to put the boundaries in. Yeah? And you need that correlation, that harmony between the masculine and feminine. If you're thinking about an important issue for yourself, what I'd encourage you to do is to think all around it, up above, down below, round to side. Think all around it. Think as deep as you possibly can about it. And then ask your feeling world what it feels about it. What do you feel about it? You know what you think about it. What do you feel about it? And when your feeling world is in agreement with your thinking world, and your thinking world is agreeing in your feeling world, then you are living from your soul. Because you're in harmony. You're in agreement. Let me give a little twist on where two or three are gathered together. Yeah? When your thinking world and your feeling world and your soul are gathered together, there is God. There is the light. Yeah? Not to do with the outside. It's not really to do with people. Jesus used these illustrations because he's talking to people who didn't get it in terms of the depth of things. They were uneducated people, even on a spiritual level. They were very young souls. But we have got greater wisdom 2,000 years on in humanity. There are people in men and women in society that, you know, that have Carl Jung, Freud and so on, and people that have helped us to think about these things, help us to understand how we are made as human beings. So when your mind and your feeling world and your soul are in unity, God has to act. And light has to shine. Those of you that love acronyms, FEAR, false evidence appearing real. False evidence appearing real. It's not real. Anything that is not of God is not real. Anything that God didn't make is not real. So what mankind brings to us may have fear attached. So false evidence appearing real. So look for the evidence. I start when I work with a lot of anxious people. I work with a lot of people who can't deal with their feelings at all. And One of my other two mothers, I've had seven or eight now up to this point. Christine, my first therapist, and Maureen, my second, and the first one, Christine, I remember she's such a quiet, beautiful spirit she had, and her light was shining. And one day she said to me, "Alan, who are you not trusting?" And I kept vow, I don't know, went through a whole range of, you know, I didn't say the Queen, you know, I didn't get as far as that, but I went through a whole range of things and people I wasn't trusting. And she was getting really frustrated. This quiet, gentle woman raised her voice. "Alan, who are you not trusting?" And I said, "Myself." And that was the right answer. Trusting myself. She taught me to trust myself. And Maureen, she taught me to feel. And she said to me on the last session that we had together, "Alan, you've learnt to move on from surviving to thriving. That you potentially can thrive now rather than just survive." And she gave me this wonderful illustration. She said, "You've learnt with your feeling world to play more than one note on the piano." Think about your feeling world being a piano. And we're afraid of most of the piano. We only want to play the notes that are good. The negative, the bad feelings, we don't want to experience. And so we stay away from those feelings. And so, but all we need to ask for is courage. That's all we need. All we need ever is the gift of courage. With the gift of courage, how far could we go if we just have courage, eliminating the fear? And so it is my ambition now to feel all that I need to feel. When we were going through our difficult times in the last few years with Val and Louise and with cancer and so on, there were moments when I thought, if both my beloved daughter and my beloved wife were to die, this is another question, an equation I asked myself. Would love have left the planet? Would love have left the planet if that happens? The two people of the four people, and then you start saying the people I love most, and it's ridiculous because you can't differentiate love. You can't love more or less. Love is love, all embracing. But you know what I mean emotionally. I'm talking about emotional attachment, the dearest emotional attachment. And my family to me, as you can imagine, more so to me than most, growing up without family. Family, don't you dare go near my family. That always comes first for me. Because that's when I show whether I know what love is or whether I know what fear is. And we act according to those we supposedly love by whether we're in fear or whether we're in love. Kabir, I'm moving on now and I need to move on. "More than all else do I cherish at heart the love which makes me live a limitless life in this world." The love that enables us to live a limitless life. There are no limits. You young people sitting here, there are no limits to your future. There are no barriers. You can be all that you desire to be. And what the Bible encourages us to do is to, what is it you desire most? What is your heart's song? Listen, listen, listen to your heart's song. Feeling. Listen, listen, listen to your mind's song. Listen, listen, listen to your soul song. And if it's the same song, you're in business. So you trust yourself with your heart song, your mind song, your soul song. Don't be limited, because the world needs you to bring more light. And those of you that are not so young, don't dare to think you get away with this. While you have a last breath in your body, this world needs your light. Until that last breath goes, this world needs your light. And when your last breath does go, you'll be one of those angels that we were singing about tonight, whose light is still shining in the ether for us. Everyone that has died, that knew about light, we can't see their bodies, but their light, believe me, is shining all around us, encouraging us to shine our light. William James, to look at the world differently, we must be willing to change our belief system. Let the past slip away, expand our sense of now, and dissolve the fears in our minds. We could make a start with this. I love this quote from Yogananda. Why call yourself a sinner? What does it matter what you were called yesterday? We sung it just a short while ago. Bear it no more. Bear it no more. Yet how many times do we keep going back? We need to move on from calling ourselves sinners. Doesn't matter what we were called yesterday. Because we are blocking the light when we talk about ourselves in that way. We are children of the light. We're supposed to be light bearers. I wrote about 15 years ago in my journal, make me a light bearer. Because the world needs our light and it needs your light. So don't keep thinking dark thoughts about lack and being less than. We're all more than. We're all more than. Every person who sits in the chair, in the sofa bed opposite me, I sit in a chair and they sit in a sofa bed. And I just use this language to them. But you're more than. You're more than. And we need to get to the more than. You've come here with less than. That's how you feel about yourself. But we will get to the more than. Because I look for the light in them. I keep looking for the light in them until I see it. And then we get to the more than. And I was one of those people with a different image that Burns was talking about. I was. I still am. I still make some people feel uncomfortable and I bring fear to people. I bring fear to people because I have a different way of looking sometimes. Whoa, I've never thought about that before. Is that theologically correct? I stand from where I stand and I see what I see. And I say what I say. Yeah? You choose whether you hear, you want to hear or not hear. That's what you need to do. You need to hear with the ears of the soul and you need to see with the eyes of the soul. And when you look with the eyes of the soul, you stare fear down and it runs out the room. When you stare with your mind, your conscious mind, there's a saying, a German folk tale, that the longer you look at the wolf, the bigger it gets. But the wolf isn't real. You look with the eyes of the soul and the wolf disappears. So we need to learn to look through the eyes of the soul. And the creatives, the music that takes us into a soul place, the creative writing, the art, and so on, these and the rhythms, they're all meant to get you into the place of the soul where you start to experience the kingdom of God from the soul. Not through your five senses. Please, please, please read Helen Keller, who had three senses, not five. But she knew how to live from her soul in a way that would inspire you with your five senses. I was really touched by what Burns said about that. Although I've seen the film, but I didn't notice it. Again, what eyes was I looking with? I didn't notice the kiss. I do now. Judas Iscariot, the model of fear. The model of fear. Someone who actually, not just him, but others. Jesus wasn't who he thought he was going to be. And he became fearful about that. And then he became more and more gripped by fear. And then he was easy to manipulate. Easy to manipulate children, isn't it? When they're full of fear. Because we're children when we're full of fear. I really want to get that across. When you're in fear, you're a child. I don't care how old you are, you're a child. And you need to deal with life by not being a child. And I often say to people, why are you letting a five-year-old run your life? So Judas, full of fear, and he gave a kiss to Jesus. I think it's time we return the kiss and we kiss fear away. To kiss away the scars of the mind, the heart fears, so that the conduits of light are unblocked. There was a time for me when, in a church situation, I was on trial. And the people that were trying me, some of them were my friends. And we'd sold a house. We were committed to, we were going to be a community of God. But one day I found myself on trial, being accused of something. I had no clue what they were talking about. And I felt fear then, because these were Christian men, loving men, some of them. In their 20s and 30s, which is one of the ego states that's not great. We think we know. We think we know at that age. 21, I thought I knew everything. So bless them. They put me on trial. And there was one young man said to me, Alan, how are you feeling right now? And I said, I've never felt more condemned and in fear. And he said, well, that's not what we're meaning to do. I said, but that's what's happening. And so that was another repeat of, do I belong in the center here? And it wasn't long before we moved on out of that. And that, going back to the boy who couldn't get into the center, and I was found to be unacceptable because I don't conform. I don't quite fit in. And it's no longer because of I'm wearing these short trousers that are much too short, or these trousers that are much too long, or this haircut that defines where I came from. But it's because I think differently. And I feel differently. So Isaiah, or Isaiah as you all say here. Though the mountains be shaken and the hills be removed, yet my unfailing love for you will not be shaken. Fear will not be shaken. You will not tremble if you're in God's unfailing love. So if you're trembling and you're in fear, you're not in God's unfailing love. His unfailing love is going on, but you're not in the stream of it. You've stepped out of the stream to feel some fear. So get back in the stream. Step back into the lake. Get baptized all over again in love. Then, let me read this again. Though the mountains be shaken and the hills be removed, yet my unfailing love for you, underlined, for you, will not be shaken, nor my promise of peace be removed. Our peace goes when fear comes. Yeah? Our peace comes when fear goes. That's what it's meaning. Simple as that. And then unfailing love. So those human beings that thought they were loved, they came together and they thought they were loved in childhood, in adulthood, when they chose a partner and so on, and thought love was in the air. If that failed, it cannot have been love, because love does not fail. God's unfailing love. So we've substituted something in there somewhere. Because Paul says in 1 Corinthians 13, love never fails. He reinforces Isaiah. Unfailing love. So another equation. I just want to read Psalm 27, part of it. And I know I'm going over time, but is that okay, Don? Thank you. This was the psalm that lit my soul up produced the light in me at 18 when I was getting baptized by Pastor White, bless him. I was 6 foot and he was 5 foot nothing, and getting on a bit. And he was holding this 6 foot 18 year old, and my head hit the bottom of the, and didn't crack, didn't bleed, but he did crack my head open to a little bit, bless him, because he couldn't hold me. So I remember that about my baptism. Plus, so I went under, all the way under, and there's snow on the ground at the time, but bless him, lovely man. And I read this: "The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the defense of my life. If God be for us, who can be against us?" If God be for me, you've got to personalize these things. Don't just literally read the Bible. Change it and make it yours. If God be for me, who and what can be against me? Who and what? Bring it on. Who or what? "When evildoers come upon me to devour my flesh, my adversaries and my enemies, they stumbled and fell. Though a host encamp against me, that circle of men I just told you about, though a host encamp against me, my heart will not fear." It did, and it sent me down to a place in myself that I'd never been before. And I want you to remember this, it was Christians who did that. They sent me to a place where I did go so deep that I contemplated, what's the point of life? I've never ever contemplated that. I had a lovely wife and two lovely boys. But I thought, what's the point of life now? Alan, will Alan ever be loved? Because although I knew Val loved me and my boys loved me, it wasn't enough to make up for the emptiness of childhood. It wasn't enough. I needed more. And they sent me into a place that I've never been since and will never go there again. "Though the host encamp against me, my heart will not fear. Though war rise against me, in spite of this, I shall be confident. He will lift me up upon a rock." I just want to finish now with his wonderful words. "Thou dost prepare a table before me." Before you and before me, there is a table always before you. Now you have each have a table, and on that table is goodness and loving kindness. "Surely goodness and loving kindness will follow me all the days," not once a year, not once every 5 years, all the days. "Goodness and mercy every day. Loving kindness will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever." So be gentle with yourself and conquer a fear every single day. That's what Emerson deemed to be necessary and a success. He said, if we're not conquering a fear every single day, we are not living. We are not living if we're not conquering a fear every single day. I just want to finish with this wonderful book that one of my soul companions here gave me. Talking about the light within. "It is a dynamic center, a creative life that presses to birth within us. It wants to birth within us. And when the masculine and feminine come together in harmony, we give birth to it. It is the light within which illumines the face of God and casts new shadows and new glories upon the face of men. It is a seed stirring to life if we do not choke it. It is the Shekinah of the soul, the presence in the midst. Here is the slumbering Christ, stirring to be awakened. To become the soul we clothe in earthly form, mind and heart. And action. And he is within us all." God bless you all. And Val and I, we love you.